Good morning, everyone. Education Innovation Policy will come to order. This is another day in February 2017, so we're moving right along. Representative Grassl, no, I think you've already done this, so I better move to somebody else. We'll take turns. Representative Akunish Pradeen, have you looked over the minutes so we can move approval?
I move that we pass the minutes from our meeting of
Representative Akunish Pradeen moves approval of the minutes of February 1st.
The date is missing.
Second. Yes. Did you notice that? Mm-hmm. We need a technical change.
Yes.
How did we miss that one? With the technical change that the date be printed correctly at the top of the minutes, February 2nd, 2017. That's what was getting to me as I was reading these. Are there any other additions or corrections? This will be a technical change, so we'll make sure that's done. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved as technically corrected. Thank you, Representative Akunish Pradeen. Members, this morning we have three bills before us, but we also have visitors. We have the pages, our House pages in attendance this morning, and they specifically came to hear this little addition to curriculum dealing with civics. So the chair is going to take precedence this morning and present her bill. But pages, would you each come to the microphone? I think you can. My master page, would you make sure the microphone is set so that each can just come up to the microphone, say your name, and return to your seat. And be sure you tell us from what school you come. So let's start at the beginning here. And just make a little circle through the next row.
Hi, my name is Emma. I'm from Egan High School in Egan, Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Next.
I'm Hector. I'm from Armstrong High School.
Welcome, Hector. Next.
My name is Lucian. I'm from Great River School right here in St. Paul.
Very good. Welcome.
My name is Hannah. I'm from Charton High School.
Very good. Welcome.
I'm Piper. I'm from Southwest High School in Minneapolis.
Welcome. Thank you.
My name is Corey, and I'm from GFW High School.
Welcome. So we have one rural so far.
Good morning. My name is Taylor. I'm from New Prague.
Another rural. Thank you. Welcome, everyone. This is not the full cadre, correct, Steve?
We have one student that's missing this morning.
Just one missing.
Eight students each week for 10 weeks.
So very good. Thank you very much. This is such a great opportunity for you. So welcome again. So members, we'll begin our meeting this morning then with House File 731. The chair will place this before us with the intent to lay it over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Members, House File 731 came to my attention as our previous nonpartisan researcher, Lisa Larson, was retiring. She had worked with Representative Erdahl to incorporate the language that you will find in your folder. I simply copied the conference committee report from last session on requiring knowledge and understanding of civics. This includes a civics test, and we had lots of bipartisan discussion on this. In fact, I think Representative Erdahl, you'll recall that we spent an entire meeting on trying to get this language so it would be amenable and appropriate for our school districts and other. So as Ms. Larson retired, she felt strongly, as did the revisor's office, that there needed to be a place for the civics test to be attached. And because, and I've included this in your packets as well, we have citizenship and government as one of the 4 points of the social studies standards. It fits very nicely under citizenship. In fact, I noticed this morning that we have not listed economics as part of the curriculum. Members, we don't dictate curriculum materials to our districts, but we do have in the Compulsory Education Act a listing of the four subject areas that need to be covered, among them social studies. So maybe at a later date we'll add economics so that that's clearly based on our standards. So the new language then would include in the curriculum of social studies citizenship that includes the civics test that was incorporated into law last year. Is there discussion? Representative Kunish-Padin.
Maybe you could explain to me, is this across life of a student? At what grades are they going to be expected to get this instruction, and at what grade or what age are they expected to pass this test?
Thank you for the question, Representative Kunish-Padin. Across the spectrum, the sequence of studies and social studies, civics and government is begun in the kindergarten level. And it would be wise for many of you to pull up the social studies standards. They are on the department website to take a look at this. But there's strong emphasis in K through 3 on civics and government. And then that continues through the 12th grade. Basically, civics and government subsides a bit in the freshman year, the ninth grade year, and then economics and government take over in addition to world history and U.S. history. So that's the sequence of study. The test, Representative Erdahl, I think will answer this, is given at the high school level. Representative Erdahl, in response to Representative Kunish.
Yes, thank you, Chair Erickson. By the time students have completed seventh grade, 90% of the knowledge that they would need to pass the test will have been attained. So, as Chair Erickson is saying, ninth grade is where the test would begin, and sometime between ninth grade and 12th grade, students are expected to pass the test. The test is based almost totally on the naturalization test given to new citizens of our country. It's a 50 question test, and so they are to pass it at some time in likely senior high. Although it's flexible, they could do it in seventh or eighth grade technically, just so that they are on record of passing. Now there are no recriminations if they don't pass. There are some states where if you don't pass the test, you don't graduate from high school. We don't have that in our standard here. We just believe that it's important for students to know how our country works, the rudiments of our democracy, and that's what it's all about.
And to further explain, Representative Kunish-Padin and others, if you look at the handout I've provided from last year's spending bill from the conference committee report, in lines 444.24, it's the Learning Law and Democracy Foundation, in consultation with our Minnesota civics teachers, who select by July 1 each year, and that'll start for this coming school year, 50 of the 100 questions to serve as the state civics test questions for the proximate school year, and immediately transmit those to the department and then to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, who then posts those questions on the Minnesota's Legacy website by August 1 of that year. So this law takes effect this coming school year, and then this addition to the curriculum, I think, makes it clear to teachers that it's part of that citizenship and government part of their teaching. Further questions? Representative,
thank you. I'm a teacher, so I kind of I just have a few questions of how this would happen if it went into law and the 50 questions were posted. How would it work if districts or school districts don't have that curriculum in place? Is there going to be a set of standards that they're expected to follow? And then in order for students to pass that test every year, is there going to be some kind of support or financial support, some kind of curriculum to help the school so that they don't have to scramble every year to put something together?
Representative Kunesh-Podein, this is no addition because the standards include citizenship and government substrands and standards. So any curriculum that our teachers are using, K through 12, should include this, or they are not teaching to the standards that we've set down. Representative Erdahl, response to that?
That's what I was going to say. These are the standards.
Okay.
So they should already be teaching these things. In fact, they should already be testing these things. And, you know, for those who questioned it, honestly, it's not that big a deal as a new test, because I don't even call it a new test when we passed this last year, because this is what they should already be testing. And with some fairly minor modifications, they should be able to, easily do this.
And the benchmark for kindergarten, for example, is demonstrate civic skills in a classroom that reflect an understanding of civic values, such as listening to others, participating in class discussions, taking turns, sharing with others, cooperating in class activities, wise or judicious exercise of authority. And the civic values that would be emphasized would be fairness, individual dignity, self-control, justice, responsibility, courage, honesty, common good, respect, and friendship. Those are right in our standards. That's the benchmark. And then another for kindergarten is the symbols, songs, and traditions, like the flag, the Statue of Liberty, the White House, the Pledge of Allegiance. And I've observed my grandson in kindergarten with his teacher embedding those. So it's really something that's coming naturally, I think. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this was something that I supported completely last year. And maybe just to explain a little bit, when we realize that these things are being taught, they're part of the standards, but we have, examples of go out on the street and ask questions, and people don't know. There's not a comprehensive understanding of these things. So I think it's just being very intentional to bring focus to this issue so that students even have an understanding that this is something we expect and that it's important for them to have this knowledge. If you go to the website and look at the questions, take the test that our new immigrants take, it's like, wow, everybody should know this. But if you start asking questions, it's clear that they don't. Mm-hmm. So this is really, I think, just bringing an intentional focus to our expectations for civic engagement and understanding.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Are there further questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of things. Well, first of all, I think I'd just like to ask a question of the pages. Have any of you taken the civics test yet? Not yet?
Would you like to come to the microphone and introduce yourself and comment? This law doesn't take effect till the next school year, but please sit down, introduce yourself. In other words, say your name for the record and then begin.
I'm Taylor Vidson, and I have taken a civics class that talked pretty extensively about the government, and we did have a test on it because our teacher felt strongly about the naturalization test, so it was very similar to that, and we did take the actual test just as a practice exam to kind of step into the shoes of people trying to become American citizens. So,
Representative Erdahl.
And how did you do on the test?
I did fairly well.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Basically, the idea, as I think Representative Ward was implying, it was to get some consistency across the state that we're taking basically one test, and my goal was, hopefully that our students would be able to list more presidents than the Kim Kardashians. But it's an important piece of legislation. One change that I would like to see is that the teachers be encouraged, the school districts be encouraged to report the results of the test, so that we have some way to gauge what's happening.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I think we'll hold that one until. Yes, we say a lot of encourages in statute, don't we? But we'll just wait until this takes effect, and then I think in another year we'll get some feedback. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would also like to ask the student one more little question.
Well, please come forward.
Would you care to comment on – yeah, you'll need to take the stand, please. Would you care to comment on how you perceived the value of that test? Was it helpful in understanding what the whole picture is, or what did you think about it besides how well you did?
And will you say your name for the record again?
All right, Taylor Ritson.
Say your school too.
Taylor Ritson from New Prague High School. I really appreciated taking the test. Obviously, I'm very active in government and politics, and I thought it was really helpful to understand what other people need to know to become a member of or a citizen of the United States. And I think a lot of students in our class really appreciated the passion that our teacher had for the subject as well. So I thought it was really beneficial to our class as a whole.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there further questions or comments? Representative Kunesh-Badin.
Thank you. I would just make a suggestion that the expectation is a little bit clearer when Representative Erdahl suggested or said that they could take it anywhere between 9th and 12th grade, even as early as 7th grade. From a reporting stand view of it, how would we record that the student has taken it, that they've passed it? And if we're tracking from 9th through 12th grade, those students that come in and go out from different school districts. So I guess I would just suggest that there be a very specific expectation at which grade level and when and how that recording is going to, what that's going to look like. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl, any comment to that? Maybe if this is included in the policy bill, you would have an amendment maybe for clarification after you visit with our school districts.
After I what?
After you visit with school districts.
Okay. Yes, I could. We could look at that.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I think the department wanted to make a statement about this, and if there are others in the audience with concern or support in regard to this, please come forward. Welcome to our committee, Mr. Adosh. Uni, and say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this bill. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations with the Department of Education. So it's always difficult to come and say some pieces that are a bit against the bill that is bipartisan support as well as from the chair, but I appreciate the opportunity to at least provide the position from the department. So as you know, the commissioner did come have some strong feelings about the civics test that was passed last year. She felt that we already have the standards embedded in across our curriculum and through our standards, and when you do actually look at civic participation rates of our students in Minnesota and our adults, you see a much higher rate than in other parts of the country as well as our voting rate. So this is adding another test to students' loads that maybe is going to something that isn't necessarily an issue in Minnesota. But the test is law, and so this, my comments aren't to the test itself, but embedding the test in our local curriculum. We're not in the habit in the state of Minnesota of delving very deep into the details of what local districts set as their curriculum. And this would create, seemingly, and we're more than welcome to have further conversations offline, but this would seemingly encourage districts to create a teach-to-the-test environment around this test in their citizenship sections. I think The commissioner supports the idea of putting citizenship in there, getting to those four points in the handout that the chair provided, where it's citizenship and interest in also placing economics, but adding a reference to the civics test as a required portion of the curriculum is seemingly requiring districts and charters to create curriculum around a particular test. We believe that we should allow the districts to create their curriculum as they see fit in terms of the standards and requirements that they have to keep their students to for graduation.
So, Mr. Uni, where would the test then land? Because I think this was the concern that Ms. Larson had after we had enacted this, and also with the revisor's office. Then is this just dangling out there? I know that we did make reference in the bill last year as well to perhaps give the test on that special day. That, members, is called Constitution Day and found in lines 444.18 of this handout I've provided. So please comment on that, Mr. Uni.
Well, I believe, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do believe that the civics test is set in statute. And so the requirement is there for the districts to give the test and the students to take the test over the course of 9th to 12th grade. And so I do believe that because it's in statute, the requirement is there, and districts are well aware of their responsibility there, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Are there any other comments? Representative Pryor.
Thank you. So the test is in statute right now?
It was enacted last year in the spending bill, right. Yes. And that's the handout I gave you from the conference committee. But you can go to the new statute books that you have received and find it in 120B.02.
And could we just say in very specifically then what are we adding now that was not put into statute before?
To curriculum under compulsory ed, the word citizenship, because it is part of our standards and that seems to make sense. I think we should add economics as well, since that's part of the standards. Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, representatives, yes, and I think the commissioner would support saying adding citizenship and economics alone to the bill. But this bill goes just a little bit further and makes reference to citizenship that includes civics consistent with the statute that is on the test. And so it's mandating in the curriculum teaching to, creating curriculum that teaches to a particular test. And we don't see that specifically spelled out in the other curriculum lines in that statute.
Well, Mr. Uni, I would beg to differ. Teaching to the test, I think any materials that are taught perhaps in a citizenship unit would make a test of whatever questions are determined by this group and the teachers who teach in our social studies department, just a reflection of what the children have learned. I don't care for that phrase, teaching to a test. I think teachers teach so that they can test their students to see if they've learned, but we don't specifically teach to tests. This is my comment as the author of the bill. Are there others in the audience who have concerns or would like to express? Thank you, Mr. Uni.
Sure.
Mr. Erdahl, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. I certainly agree with the comments that you made about, that the chair made about teaching the test. I just want to, because I think that clarifies more what we're trying to do with the civics test, but I just would like to say for those who are new to this, that last year the bill went through a lot of ups and downs and travails and drama, but in the end, I think it's a good civics lesson in itself. It was a great example of working together and trying to make accommodations. I made many concessions to the education commissioner and to others, and we dropped the provision that they couldn't graduate if they didn't pass the test, and other things that we changed to make it more palatable. But this is a bill that had the support of the majority leader of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, wide bipartisan support when we finally did get it through. And as I say, a good civics lesson in itself.
Thank you very much. The chair lays over 731 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Members, we'll move to Representative Erdahl. This is kind of his day. Representative Erdahl, would you like to take the go to the testifying table and present House File 574? And I know, Representative Erdahl, you've been on the tape a lot so far, but please reintroduce yourself so that those who are listening or watching do know that this is your provision. Welcome to the testifying table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Dean Erdahl.
And what district do you represent, Representative Erdahl?
18A.
And that's what counties? Or
I have Meeker County, the city of Litchfield, and other cities. Three townships in McLeod County, including half the city of Hutchinson, and one township in Wright County, which is Cocato.
Thank you. Will you move your House file, please?
I will move House File 574, and I believe the motion is this going to Ed Finance?
That's correct. Representative Erdahl moves House File 574 to be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. You also have an amendment. Will you move the A1 amendment, please?
Yes, I will move the A1 amendment.
Representative Erdahl moves the A1 amendment. Please explain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And all this does, and it was in the advice of nonpartisan staff, clarify a little bit more what a teacher is for the purposes of this bill.
And Representative Erdahl, I believe you checked with staff, correct?
Yes.
To clarify some of this. Members, you know, we have very learned staff, and when they see a phrase or a word or even a sentence that might cause confusion, they recommend changes. So with that, members, the A1 amendment is needing approval. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. The amendment A1 is adopted. Please explain your bill, Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill did pass last year. It was in the tax bill, which was eventually vetoed. And so now we're starting over again. Actually, this is probably the sixth year that I've tried to get this thing here through. But anyway, let me explain. This bill provides an incentive to get a master's degree for teachers in their content area, in other words, in what they are teaching. About half of the teachers in Minnesota get master's degrees. 92% of them do not get a master's degree in what they teach. 92% of the 50%. Following the Finnish model, where every teacher has to have a master's degree in what they teach, I developed this. It is reasonable to assume that if one knows more about a subject area, they should be better at what they teach. Now, that's not an absolute, but it's generally should be the case. This offers a one-time $2,500 credit for teachers who do get a master's degree in their content area. As I said, in Finland, all teachers must have content area masters. Their education system is highly rated across the world, and this is one of the key elements to their success. In this bill, the fiscal note is approximately $300,000. Now, another reason for doing this bill now is that we have a situation, potential problem with our concurrent enrollment program, where we have, through colleges, teachers teaching students who then get college credit. Unfortunately, an education group in Chicago that oversees these types of programs has raised objections that our teachers who are hired by colleges to do these concurrent education courses do not have master's degrees in their content area. And therefore, it's another important reason to pass this bill to help these teachers who need to get master's degrees in what they teach. I also heard from Erin Doan of the Board of Teaching. She would like to expand this a little bit. I just got her suggestions yesterday, and am not prepared today to deal with her suggestions. There are a couple more stops, and we may choose to do so at a later time. So, with that, I appreciate your support.
Other questions? Representative Kunesh-Badidi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I noticed that you have limited this to elementary school teachers.
No.
It says that in there.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's one part that deals with elementary, but that's there also is others. In elementary, they have to obtain a master's in one of the content areas that they teach. I certainly am aware that an elementary teacher, you know, maybe teaching math, science, history, social, whatever, they have to get one in one of those areas that they are teaching. But also, you read further in the bill, it addresses senior high.
Okay. Representative Kunesh-Badidi.
And then just one other question. Is it limited to English, reading, language arts, math, science, foreign languages, civics and government, art, history, and geography? I'm a library media specialist. Would I be eligible for that? Would an ESL teacher be eligible for that? Would a special ed teacher be eligible for that?
It would have
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It would have to be in what you are teaching.
But when you list it like that,
Representative,
it feels like it leaves limitations.
Representative Erdahl,
we're
on page 2 of the bill.
Where is it?
Clause D.
Okay. You know, it says, Madam Chair, it says including, but it doesn't exclude anything either. We'll look at this, and this gets on to the question that Erin Doan had as well.
Okay.
And so we'll take a look and see if there are groups that are being excluded that we should address.
Thank you.
Ms. Pira, do you want to clarify this core content area, because that is mentioned in both of the sentences in Clause B. So is it because those are the areas in which elementary teachers and secondary teachers earn, for the most part, academic subject area content specialties? Ms. Pear?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if those are the areas where teachers normally earn master's degrees.
Thank you. That's adequate. I mean, I don't expect you to figure this out. Mr. Strom is in the audience. Do you want to bring any clarity to this? Or if so, please come forward. Welcome to our committee, and please say your name for the record. And
Madam Chair, Tim Strom from House Research. Sorry for the confusion this morning. Ms. Perrin and I would be glad to work with Representative Erdahl if the intent is to make that a broad list for each content area for which a person could get a master's degree. It's my quick read of that provision that would limit it to the ones listed there. But for the conversation earlier for the elementary school teacher, as Representative Erdahl explained, for that person where there usually isn't a content area as such for a master's degree, it would be any of those subjects. But I'm a big fan if the committee would like the list to be more inclusive to say directly so.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strom. That adds clarity. Representative Ward. I wouldn't leave yet, Mr. Strom.
Oh,
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. You had mentioned, Representative Erdahl, that was it 92 or 95% of the teachers who get masters are not, it's not in their special core area?
Correct.
What are they getting their masters in?
Representative Erdahl.
It could be in, you know, some pedagogy related. It could be administration. A lot of them get it in administration, including my son.
And I believe curriculum also
curriculum,
is
yeah.
very popular for master's degrees.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Representative Pryor. Can we dismiss Mr. Strom, or would...
Probably.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there will be teachers that are getting master's degrees in curriculum, and they won't qualify for the credits. And so we're saying it's more important to get a master's in your content area than it's to get a master's in curriculum area. So we'll change behavior by giving these refundable tax credits. And have we talked to the school districts of, you know, what they think is going to make a strong, you know, K through 12 system, you know, because then we'll shift over. There will be fewer master's degrees gotten in curriculum development and more in, you know, in these other areas than there are right now. And do we know, you know, what kind of impact that will have on our school districts?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I said, 92% are getting them in areas that are not the content area. There will not be a sea change in what happens. Most are still going to do what they're doing. What we are trying to do is to find some way to incentivize some teachers to get a master's in what they are teaching because we think it's a good thing. But we are not saying that teachers have to. You know, this is not a mandate. This is teachers who choose to do that if they think that the $2,500 incentive is enough to make them do it. There will still be, and most will still be getting their master's degrees in other areas because they want to be in curriculum or they want to be administrators or whatever. This doesn't exclude anyone from doing that.
Representative Erdahl, isn't part of your intent, however, to help those who are concurrent enrollment teachers
yes.
who are facing the Higher Learning Commission's request that they have masters in their content area to continue to teach? Would you comment on
right.
that, please,
yes.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing that up again. For certain teachers in the concurrent area, it is definitely directed at them. But they have a different need because they are contracted differently.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl. I just would like to speak up in support of this bill from my fellow members. I was at a conference this Saturday that included Southeastern Minnesota educators, and it was superintendents and school board chairs and principals, and this was one of the top things on their lists was providing support for teachers to get their master's, specifically because of this concurrent enrollment rule that the Higher Learning Commission has in place. So I heard this need loud and clear from my not only my district, but the whole Southeastern Minnesota region, and it specifically targets trying to help our kids be able to take these concurrent enrollment classes, which helps them, of course, get to to college and pay those college bills easier. So this is, again, I felt directly coming from the teachers and the educators that this would help them. So I speak in support of the bill.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh-Badin, you had a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I think this is a wonderful bill, and I love the incentive. I can tell you as a person who really could have used this at a time, I was a single mom going to weekend college and working 2-3 jobs to get my teaching license as well as my master's, and this would have been a godsend as much as it is, and I really appreciate you doing that. The only thing that really concerns me, so
when it comes, and I'm just sort of stuck on this elementary school situation, because when you're a first grade kindergarten all the way through, say, eighth grade, you're an eighth grade teacher and you are teaching all of these different subjects. And when you limit it to just a couple of, or some of these subject areas, that sort of eliminates that elementary school teacher. So I do support this, and I really appreciate all your hard work on this. I just think it needs to be a little bit fine-tuned, and I'd be happy to work with you on that. But there's just some wording in here that could easily limit or preclude somebody from taking advantage of this situation. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you. Just to reply to that, I mean, there was some consternation is the wrong word, but trying to decide what to do with elementary teachers. You know, it is different because they teach, you know, multiple things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I hope that we made it plain in the bill that an elementary teacher to get a master's simply has to concentrate on one of the areas where they teach. That's all that it is. Just pick an area that you teach and get a master's in that. I mean, we couldn't have them get a master's in everything that they teach. That would have been a little difficult. And we're trying to get away from, you know, just a master's in, you know, something in pedagogy or something in curriculum. We're trying to get away from that. And this is what was settled upon. And if somebody has some other brilliant idea on where to do it, we could consider it. But it was a difficult thing to come up with.
And believe me, Representative Erdahl is very easy to work with. Those of you who served on the committee last year know that it was an entire meeting, Representative Mariani, when we figured out the civics. And this chair just threw up her hands and said, go for it, because it was very bipartisan. It was very good. Representative Mae Quaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I like your bill. I just have a question because I don't have a master's. How much does it usually cost to get a master's degree?
Representative Erdahl.
You know, it varies. And, you know, frankly, it's been a long time since I've paid any attention to it. I could, you know, I could hazard a guess, but maybe someone in the audience or elsewhere can tell us what a master's degree costs nowadays.
Phone a friend, Representative Rudolph.
You know, 10,000.
Okay, that's helpful. I just wanted to.
Manage. You know what? I will get that specific answer because I should know that anyway.
Well, Representative Rudolph, when it was very popular to get masters in curriculum, I think both St. Mary's and St. Thomas were two universities who charged between $8,000 and $10,000 if you did the fast track. Now, that's several years ago, but I'm sure we'll learn more.
I'll phone my son and ask him.
Representative Mae Quaid, were you finished?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to say that's helpful to know because then $2,500 does offset a large chunk of that master's, and I think that makes me like it even more. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Rudolph, I do like your bill, and I'm trying to think how many times we tried to pass this over the last couple of years. and I'm, you know, you continue to refine it and bring some good deliberate thought to it. I appreciate it. I have a couple questions, and they're probably more procedural than anything else. So, Madam Chair, is the motion to move this to taxes or is it to move to finance?
Representative Mariani, we're moving it to the Committee on Education Finance.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Then taxes.
Right. And so that would be appropriate because then that will give us the time to weigh in on the possible expansion.
More refining.
Refining. I like the ESL idea. We're talking about the fastest growing student group in the state, so that makes sense. And I heard about library arts, et cetera. Here's my question. What if the task committee says no? And you know, they might say no just because it's a tax credit, you know, and so historically we tend to kind of you know, keep a little bit of a lid on tax credits. Have you thought about other ways in which we might be able to still provide financial support for these candidates?
Representative Erdahl, do you have an alternative?
Madam Chair, no, we don't, and I don't think we need one. I can't tell you the number of times that Chair Davids has said. And, of course, the most important bill in the tax bill is Representative Erdahl's. As long as the Lanesboro Dam is... Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. quite seriously, all that aside, Representative Davids has been very supportive of this. He comments on the need now with the concurrent as well. He's very, very aware.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's encouraging. I'm glad to hear that. I know that, again, tax credits tend to be a tough sell, even for a really good idea. So that's really good that you've got that intel.
Again, it was in the bill last time, and I know I'm very confident it will be again.
And then, Madam Chair, just the final piece. I like the refunding, the credit refundable as well. I think that gets at some of Representative McQuaid's questions about making sure that there's as big an impact as possible to offset the cost here. So, like your bill.
Thank you.
Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, for keeping working on this bill. A lot of our teachers in our district are coming up to that deadline where they have to have their master's if they can teach the concurrent enrollment. And I like the focus. I know there's a lot of other areas they could get their master's in, but I think the intent of the bill is to focus on for the teachers who are going to need this to keep teaching the concurrent enrollment. Is that correct?
Representative Erdahl.
Yes, with those who are teaching concurrent enrollment, these college classes, they need to do something.
Madam Chair,
Representative Daniels.
I read it someplace, but I forgot the deadline. Could you remind us when the deadline is coming up?
Representative Erdahl.
For which?
For to have your master's to teach.
A higher learning commission deadline. Yeah. Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, you may know that better than I do.
The Minnesota State and the University have received a 5-year waiver, so 5 years from 2017.
Okay. And
so about 2022.
I might continue. One suggestion, and you know, this is something completely, well, not completely different, but Senator Pratt, who is the Senate author of this bill, has also suggested for those to address the concurrent situation that instead of being a tax credit at the end to allow for yearly tax credits for those who are seeking it for the concurrent enrollment situation. I don't know if we'll be looking at that or not, but that's one suggestion that Senator Pratt is working on.
Are there those in the audience with concerns or support who would like to come forward at this time to share input? Seeing none, the chair renews Representative Erdahl's motion that House File 574, as amended, be re-referred to the committee on education finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to education finance. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Our final bill is House File 602, Representative Sarah Anderson. Thank you, Pages. Best wishes for a good week. Welcome to our committee, Representative Anderson. Please say your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam.
And I'll move your bill.
Representative Sarah Anderson, and before you, I've got House File 602. Is the chair going to move the bill? Or?
And members, the chair moves House File 602 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Welcome, and please explain House File 602.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 602 applies the K-12 education credit to pre-kindergarten expenses. And that's it in a nutshell.
Questions from members? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, just very quick question, Representative Anderson. So there are several eligible pre-K programs here. They're listed clearly in the bill. What can you tell us about the equivalent level of standards across these? And nothing detailed, but I mean, are these high standards? Are these varying standards? So we have child care programs operated by providers with early childhood development. How does it stack up with, licensed accredited preschools or programs established by school districts? Are we talking about consistent high level of instructional delivery across those different fields or across those different settings?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mariani, I apologize. It is difficult to hear right now. There's like some white noise, so if you could speak up, that would help me. I think I caught the gist of what you were looking for. As far as the programs that are established by school districts, no, you're not going to see a consistent basis of that programming because we don't have anything in statute that defines that piece. So, yeah, that piece we don't have anything defined. But obviously for the ones that are the licensed and the accredited preschools and the nursery schools and early childhood programs, we do have definitions of what makes you an accredited facility. So, yes, they do have standards.
Representative Mariani.
And Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. And thank you. That's helpful. And so the whole goal is really about providing a focus on providing educational experiences over and above just simply caring for children at that age. Would it be correct to say?
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, yes. As we have changed as a society on how we deal with child care, on the early side, more and more of these facilities are offering our full preschool programs. I know the child care center that my son attended, it was, full-on educational class. It was preparing them for kindergarten. It was structured. It had lesson plans every single day. And clearly it's just recognizing that we do have those programs out there and to encourage parents to have their children attend some of those, and this will give them a benefit in choosing those for their care of their child.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam
Representative
Chair.
Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I just have a simple question. My grandchildren are school age. As I've asked about this credit, it's clear that we are expecting parents to far exceed that expense, and they do, just getting their kids to public schools. Do you have any idea what the expense is for preschool? What we're covering? How much are people spending now? And so how much is this going to help them?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ward. This is modeled off of the current K-12 credit, so you get a maximum of $1,000, and it goes from a salary range of roughly $33,000 up to the $37,000 mark. So it's really geared for folks that are of the lower income status for that piece. Of course, I know I have the other bill that changes that. I'm glad that you were able to support that piece. Parents clearly are exceeding this, which is great that they are actively engaged in their child's education. I know just child care costs overall in the metro area are pretty high if you compare it to greater Minnesota. It's been a while since I've had the intensive care from the K-5. I'll tell you what I pay currently for just afternoons. He's there about 2 hours. We're paying $117 per week. So that's what we pay. And he's older. So if you're in more intensive, it's probably, I would guess, around the $1,600 to $2,000 mark per month that you're paying for care. So, yes, it's significant. But that's in the metro. When you get into greater Minnesota, it's a different story. The cost is a lot less. So,
Representative Anderson, I think in rural Minnesota, it's about $12,000
per year.
Per child.
Mm-hmm,
per year.
No, I believe it.
So I don't think the prices are that far different between the metro, urban, and rural. Representative May Quaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, I just wanted to thank you for this bill and really thank you for adding in family daycare. I think that's amazing. I was part of a family daycare when I was young, and so it was so great to see that included, and I just want to thank you for continuing to think about how families can educate their child zero through, you know, on into college. So thank you for bringing this bill and for including that piece.
Thank you. Are there those in the audience who would like to come forward to speak to this bill? We have a very complacent audience today. Well, I should say we have a very nice audience, but we usually have comments coming. So thank you very much, everyone, for coming. And if there are no further questions or comments from anyone, then the chair renews her motion that House File 602 be re-referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the Committee on Education and Finance. Thank you very much, Representative Anderson. And members, that concludes our business for today. We look forward to Thursday when we will hear the task force report on discipline, as well as hear from Minneapolis and St. Paul officials in regard to discipline issues that they have faced over the years. With that, members, this meeting